Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online. This is the TS Radio Network, and the show tonight is In the Mix with my co-host, Kaz Wittenscape. Say hello, Kaz.
Hello. Thanks for having me tonight.
You bet. And tonight is Kaz's birthday, so you're all going to have to bear with me. Tanya, are you ready? Happy birthday to you, dear Kaz. Happy birthday to you.
And you
make wonderful biscotti.
Thank you. Thank you.
We won't ask
so
any more personal questions, but other than that, how old are you?
She's 15 going on 14.
No, I'm 56.
56.
You are not.
Looking like 25.
Thank you.
Yeah, 56. You ought to quit. Anyway, tonight's show, we're going to have a very special guest, and that's Marcel Reed, and you all know her. Everybody's waiting for her to come on. But just a reminder, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place every year in July in Washington, D.C., and this next Thursday night. Marcel will be coming on the Whistleblower Show to make an announcement about the summit, but they're not quite prepared to do that yet, so that's where we're at with that. And but otherwise...
Hello,
Marcel.
I wanted to
see. Hello,
Marcel.
Hi, Marcel.
Happy birthday,
yeah.
I wanted to see you, too.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, we have a ton of things to talk about tonight, and as everybody knows, this stinking virus thing, if you're buying into this crap, woe be to you. As I put in the promo, and people are beginning to notice the only people dying from this virus are in hospitals, nursing homes, and other institutions. Now, having said that, and like I said in the promo, knowing how these shows are monitored, I expect in the next few days on Fox and MSNBC and CBS, especially, that's a big grocery store tabloid, they're going to have video of skid loaders picking people up out of the street who dropped over dead from COVID. And that's how bad it is. But, I mean, if we've got this rampaging virus and the only place people are dying from it's in the hospital, in a nursing home, what's wrong with this picture? Social distancing, that's stupid as hell, because if anybody has walked anywhere where you're going, they've left skin cells and this and that and something else there. And so being 6 feet apart, but 6 feet apart and not touching other people has a direct physical effect and psychological effect on you. And it causes you to feel separated and isolated, and psychologically it's very damaging. These people know exactly what they're doing. And mm-hmm. A lot of people have realized that this is very detrimental, and it absolutely does nothing to slow down whatever this is. Many doctors are coming out saying it is directly linked to the flu vaccine, and the groundwork for it was in the vaccine. And they're going to come out and everybody get your flu vaccine. It might not help, fix it, but it'll keep it from being so bad, you know, like the flu. So please inject me with all that poison so I can get really sick now instead of later when I actually get the flu. Anyway, I clear your heads and get a grip here. We are being taken apart. We are being deconstructed. over the last 30 years, they've done away with our manufacturing base. We make virtually nothing. George Bush came out and said, we're now a consumer-based society, meaning basically we're parasites. We live off the labor and goods of other people. This thing shows up. And this is how adamant they are about making sure you are at a disadvantage. We are facing a food shortage. Now, that's what's coming. They're facing a food shortage. So what does the government do? They come out and close every gardening center across the country. They can't sell bedding plants, seeds, gardening tools, nothing. Now, if your country is facing a food shortage and you're coming into spring, wouldn't the thing to do be to encourage everybody to grow a garden?
Yep.
So you have food to eat? But no. And as a little kicker, USDA is sending all of our chicken now to China to be processed. And it's going to be inspected there. We're not going to do it here because the Chinese do a much better job of it. What? Here in Minnesota, they just killed off almost 70,000 chickens. Remember, we got a food shortage looming. Said it looked like they had some sort of bird flu. Last week in North Carolina, or South Carolina, I believe it was, almost 80,000 turkeys were killed. They thought they had a virus. Do you see what's happening here? Do you see a plan in action? Do you see a plan in action? I've been checking the Baltic Dry Index, and that is a record of the shipping containers coming in and out of the country. We are being cut off. So grab your butts, get your hands on everything you can to carry yourself through. If you've got any seeds of any kind at all, plant them. Although, as I understand it, they're tearing out community gardens where people in neighborhoods are planting gardens. They've come and torn all those out. They've got different cities across the country that are now talking about prohibiting the growing of home gardens because you might inadvertently spread the COVID virus. So watch your lettuce. If it looks like it's coughing and it isn't coughing anything up, pull it out and get rid of it. This is insanity, and they're doing it all incrementally. A little bit here, a little bit there. It's just like euthanizing the elderly. We started out in this state, or Connecticut, and Wyoming, I believe it was, or Montana, one of the two. I think it was Wyoming. And they passed laws saying it was okay to starve those that were mentally ill or those that had dementia or Alzheimer's to death. They don't need to be here anymore. They're using up valuable resources that some idiot needs. We have okayed abortion across the country. Almost 1 million babies aborted last year. They are coming in incrementally and okaying the eradication of certain sectors of the population. When you talk about the elderly and you talk to people in their 20s, they think that we all should be done away with because we're using up valuable resources that they need. And I'm standing there looking at these brain dead, can't think individuals thinking you're sucking up air that I need. You need to pay attention to what's going on. All of it seems like these are disparate things that are happening. These are all part of a major plan, and I think in the next 6 months we are going to see exactly what that plan entails because they're bringing it to a close. I say this infrastructure bill that creates this bank that allows the corporate overtaking of everything is the linchpin. They're going to take that's why all the businesses in the local economy, all the small businesses, home-owned, mom-and-pop operations were shut down, but Home Depot and Walmart could keep running. I don't know why Walmart would be an essential business, personally. Having been there, I think the store is disgusting, but that's me. But they have their garden center closed, too. Anyway, with all of that been said, and I've had my rant for the evening, I want to welcome to the show our special guest. We had to beg her and plead and crawl and send her chocolate, Marcel Reed. Marcel, welcome to the show.
Thank
She's
you,
not
Marie.
Talking.
It's Tanya. Come on the show. I'm very pleased to be here with you guys, especially on your birthday.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I've listened to Tanya's show in the last couple of weeks. I've caught a couple of episodes of that. So that's a really good show, Tanya, and you're so well prepared for it.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
But
thank you.
Marty told me to come on tonight. I don't really know of what the subject is that I'm supposed to discuss tonight, but I'll give it my best shot, whatever we're talking about. Of course, I'm most comfortable talking about issues that relate specifically to whistleblowing and whistleblowers. But the reason I
okay.
do is because I know that in all these instances, all of the things that Marty just said, there are always people on the inside who know.
Mm-hmm.
And those people
yes.
who speak up are whistleblowers. And what I do know about them is that the last defense for democracy are whistleblowers, because
yes.
they have the information and they tell the truth. And I think it's because they're naive. They're still under the impression
yeah.
that if people knew it, they would do something about it. And the sad truth of the matter is, as a whistleblower, the saddest truth you face in your life is when people know about it, they very often do nothing, and they turn
right.
on you for telling them the truth. How dare you force
yep.
me in a position where I have to act, when all what I would much
yes.
better do, rather do is just simply carp and move on.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
Marcel, what I've noticed too is that in the, especially the federal government, not so much locally, state-wise that I've noted, but the federal government is, it seems to me, is coming from all different directions trying to shut the whistleblowers down. And, you know, I've tried to explain to people that part of their job, when they take that job in their job description, they are required, if they see wrongdoing, waste, fraud, abuse, they are to report it. If they don't, they can lose their job. They're stuck either way. If they do report it, they, oh my God, it's like hell opens up and swallows them. But these people are required to do this, so why are you angry at them for doing their job?
Let the pendulum fall wherever they want it to fall. Wherever
yeah.
they decide
yeah.
it needs to fall.
Yeah.
Well, there, it's called
it
mandatory
just,
reporting. And
yes.
you know, and in the federal government, you are supposed to report waste, fraud, and abuse, and specifically waste
yep.
and fraud. Abuse is such a wide descriptive thing, you know. Are you being abused because you're being forced to come back from lunch 2 minutes earlier than everyone else? You know, does that really qualify
yeah.
as abuse?
Yeah.
Or is abuse the fact that you blew the whistle and they put you in a room and, for all intents and purposes, isolation, as they've done many VA whistleblowers, once they tell the
yes.
truth, one of the harshest punishments for VA whistleblowers is they take all of their responsibilities away and put them in an office without windows, with only a phone, often without a computer, and they have to sit there for 8 hours a day. So for all intents and purposes, they're spending their time in isolation.
Yes.
Wow.
And the thing is, we're paying for it. We're paying the bill on this.
Well,
not only for whatever they reported.
Can I make a comment about...
No.
No. Come on. Come on. You know me. You can't mute me. No soup for you. No, but, you know, I genuinely believe, you know, because I've shared some of these doctors' videos that I pray to God that they're still alive today for coming out and speaking what I believe is the
yes.
truth. And I believe that you believe is the truth, Marty and Marcel and Koss.
Yep.
I can't necessarily like crucify those that are, I won't crucify those that are on the front lines that are generally, they really, you know, don't know everything. And regardless of how up you are, like in the hospitals or, you know, whatnot, in that
faction of where people are being helped or typically are anyways, if they're elderly and need a nursing home or if you're in the hospital. I don't think, even in the general hospitals, that the people on the front lines, like the nurses, the respiratory therapists, the cleaners, that they are part of any kind of conspiracy whatsoever, and that they are used to taking direction from their chain of command. And now that said, I believe the virus is real, just as you've explained, like however it got here. I think that they are underreporting in certain areas like prisons. We're having a big problem with that in Oklahoma and in nursing homes. But we do know that they're overreporting and they're changing death certificates, right?
Yes.
To be the cause of death, COVID-related. And so there's this, because I posted some of these things and, I added my commentary sometimes. But, one young woman commented to somebody that had basically, agreed with what I was saying, but in more of a rougher way. And she said, "You want to join me in the ICU, and whatnot?" So, and I, in defense of her being there, she's a wonderful woman. She's a hero. She's a single mom. She's fought hard. What is she supposed to know?
See, what they've done is they have cash incentivized and monetized this virus. So if they check you into the hospital COVID,
these people don't know it.
Yes, but they get $12,000. Now the nurse in the ICU doesn't get that. The hospital does. Okay,
yeah,
and then if they put you on
to.
A ventilator, when they put you on a ventilator, the hospital gets another $38,000. And so then they've massaged the requirements for how you report COVID, and you can write down on the death certificate COVID, even if it was only an underlying cause but not the actual cause of the death.
Right.
You can put it down even if you just assumed or presumed it was COVID. If they showed any symptoms like somebody sneezed or coughed, well, they must have COVID. And you write that down on the
I've
death
got a
certificate.
Sister who is a nurse anesthesiologist, and she said, Tanya, once you've got that thing in you, chances are you're dying. Period.
Yeah. And it's just,
if you're intubated.
Go ahead, Marcel.
I was just saying, I'd heard the very same thing. If one is intubated, your chances of coming off being intubated successfully are somewhere around 20 to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Yep. Well, and then Dr. Moskowitz, when he was on with us last week, he was talking about, and I've seen pictures of them doing this to people, turning them face down, and which is, this is basically a signal, you're out of here. They call it proning, and supposedly it's being done to help the severely, well, what it's being done for is to bring a swift end, because when you put someone face down, it compromises the lungs. They can't expand and detract like they're supposed to. And this isn't like being fully conscious and healthy. Yeah, this is what it does.
There's a huge contradiction out there right now that's really bothering me. And I'll shut up for a little bit after this. It's the fact that they are, this is the fact where they're putting people on the ventilators knowing that they're likely going to die, right? But if you're not in there for COVID, what are they telling the EMTs? If they aren't breathing, DNR, do not resuscitate.
Yep.
And why is that? Because they're not getting $12,000 for it?
But they'll write COVID down on the death certificate and collect the money. This is, and that's, that's the whole thing here. Cause you're awful quiet. Say something.
I'm just listening and taking it all in. And, I already told you I got some sad news about a family member, and it's just, it's just all unreal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And,
Member related to to COVID.
Yeah.
I
would love to hear more from Marcel about the convention and how it got its start. I'm just so excited to have Marcel on, and I have so many questions I would love to ask her.
Certainly.
How many years ago did it start, and what inspired you to start it?
There's a story.
I'm not going to make it long. So I'm a whistleblower. Lots of people don't know that. And I was also an organizer with a large association, and I found that there was definitely fraud and theft involved. So I was on the board of the national board of this association, and we found out that there was waste and fraud involved, and they selected three people, Carol Hemingway, Karen Inman from right there in Minnesota, where you are, Marty, and me. And they put us on an interim management board to bring this organization out of, it wasn't bankruptcy, but out from under the cloud of investigation for embezzlement. When we did, we found out that they actually were embezzling money, and that there were a number of organizations with interlocking boards. There were so many organizations that I thought that I was on something called the primary, a member of the primary organization, and there was three or four others. I found out that they were actually over 300 different organizations all under this umbrella with interlocking boards, and people did not know they were on the boards.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And the method of this organization was Alinsky, so I'm always slightly amused when people talk about Alinsky now like it's something they found out in the last 10 or 11 years, when Alinsky actually is kind of obsolete. So when I see these gatherings like at the different nation's capitals now, I just look at it. It's all old school Alinsky, only they added guns. But it's an old organizing technique. So I didn't even know I was a whistleblower. I just went to tell these people that they should not steal money from poor and marginalized communities. I was a whistleblower. My life was threatened. I lost almost everything I had built over years and years. And because I was a grassroots organizer, I started to plot how whistleblowers could tell the truth and not be punished for it. Because I had told the truth. I had never taken a dime from anyone. I've never... never was involved in anything to hurt anyone, and I was offended by the way they were treating the people in my organization, because at that time I was a good, 20 years younger than most of the people in my organization, and I took it as a personal affront that they would use these people and take what little they had. So when I started to report it, my life fell apart. And I looked around, and there really was no one to help someone like me. I was a volunteer. I was reporting on an NGO, and there was no financial recourse for me. There was no real legal recourse for me. I was just kind of hung out to dry, and I got platitudes. Oh, it's so good you're telling the truth, Marcel. That's terrible. Did they do that to you? I'm so sorry to hear it. Oh, that's terrible. I heard that 300 times. So I decided that there needs to be somewhere the whistleblowers can come together. I had, and there had been something called Whistleblower Week in D.C. I went to it one time, and then it went defunct. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was defunct. It was called Whistleblower Week. And it was started, or I don't know who started it, but I know that a woman that was very prominent in it was Marsha Abigail Coleman, or Coleman Abigail, and she had blown the whistle on the EPA. And she blew the whistle at the EPA because there were a number of mines, and they had hired these really poor people to work in the mines. The people were dying, and she couldn't get the EPA to support the workers and not the corporations. She reported it, and it ruined her career. So she had been a federal employee for, I think, 20 or 22 years.
Wow.
And she was trying to protect the workers against the corporations. And it was the same old story. She told the truth. Her life was blown apart. And so she started something called Whistleblower. She was with something called Whistleblower Week. Anyway, it went defunct. And then after I blew the whistle and my life was threatened and shredded and, you know, people were threatening to kill me, then I decided that the only way that you can survive being a whistleblower once you've told a big truth, I always try to tell people English isn't broad enough a language, because in English, truth covers everything. You know, I told her her fingernail polish didn't match her hair, or I told her her dress didn't match her shoes, and you know, we consider this acts of bravery. And then there are people who tell these massive truths, and their lives, for all intents and purposes, stop. And I've often told Marty this. Once you tell this kind of truth, the last thing in life you can do is hide. The last thing you can do is hide. The minute you hide, your life becomes worse.
Wow. So I have I'm in awe of you, and you're my, I'm going to cry. You're my birthday gift. Like, I'm just kind of like in the, you know, a small potato, kind of small fry. And yet, you know, the bullying and things that were threatened, but, you know, nothing happened. Would you say, looking back on it from, you know, a couple decades, did it work out that it was all worth it coming forward and saying stuff? Or do you ever feel you wish you had not said anything?
Well, I became a whistleblower in 2009, 2010. I really wish I had been prepared.
Yeah.
How to tell the truth and not absorb so much pain. So one of the reasons the summit comes up every year is because, one, I want whistleblowers to meet other whistleblowers so that you don't feel so isolated and alone, because blowing the whistle can take you out of being in the general flow of the population. I mean, your family is often embarrassed because they wish you would just be quiet and not talk about it anymore.
Yes.
You lose your friends because your friends, understandably, don't want to live this kind of strange life that you find yourself living. And it's not always by choice. Sometimes it's that you just tell the truth, and it just takes your life in a completely different tilt. And people are happiest when their eyes are closed.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is
that's
that?
Very true.
To be blissfully ignorant.
Yes, blissfully
ignorant. You
know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so that, you know, once you're a whistleblower, that kind of drops for you. You know, you just, it drops for you. You don't have the ability to just be blissfully ignorant anymore. And you don't know why, because I tell people all the time, the big secret of my life is I am just as goofy as you get to be. just goofy. I tend to laugh all the time. I'm goofy. I'm always telling jokes, and I was a prankster, and all of that. And people say you were absolutely a jokester, the silliest person you could meet. But once I told the truth, and it's still that I'm not silly. I'm as silly as the day is long. But the truth of the matter is, I elect not to close my eyes.
More people were like that, this world would be so different.
Yeah. Marcel, it's like I told you, in writing articles and stuff, people will holler conspiracy theorists. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, and then they get into the political name calling, and you're this and you're that. But I learned early on to always link to government documents about what I'm talking about. And then people really get angry because as long as you don't have any evidence in there to tie it to, they can call you names and diminish and marginalize you. But when you put evidence in front of them and say, here it is right here, it's not me saying this, it's them saying this, they get really angry because once they know, just like the people who are exposed to whistleblowers, once they know and they see the evidence, now you have an obligation to do something. And they do not want that obligation. So they'll stand there all day long and go, no, because they don't want to have to do anything. And that's what I've encountered for years.
Public corruption.
Don't tell me anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is, Tanya. Yep. It is public corruption. It is public corruption. Yep. You know, and to me, I understand that the mechanisms of, often people get caught in the mechanisms of, you know, why they did it and all of that. But the truth of the matter is that I have found in the, this is the whistleblower's ninth year, I have found that the stories I have heard year in and year out from whistleblowers across the spectrum, you know, from banking and fraud whistleblowers to intelligence community whistleblowers, is that no matter how these stories are told, it is this constant struggle between the people who don't have anything and the people who maintain absolute power. And people think that when people chase money, they want money. But someone told me once, I don't have any money. Someone told me once, he said, money is just to gain power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The
ultimate
allure of
money is power. And these people that are in power, and it doesn't matter who you think they are, once they are in power, they will not give it up willingly.
Good point.
Right.
At how many people's expense, how many lives' expense, because they will not give that up? And that's just, you know, the people in the trusted positions as public servants, not to demean that position. We're supposed to be able to honor it. That person should be considered, you know, a statesman or woman that has pride in what they do, that is selfless. And you know something? It's just far too often not working that way. And Marty, I can't even tell you how many times, like, you have said the fact that what's going on behind the scenes when all these distractions are taking place in the front, such as this bill, H.R. 6422. And I'm looking at it right now, really more in depth for the first time. And I know this is something that you want to talk about.
Well, oh, you're talking to or Marty?
I'm talking to I'm talking to this whole table, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Storm, Just let me say one thing about this bill, the Infrastructure Bank. I was at a meeting in D.C., and I really have to be honest, I had never heard of the Infrastructure Bank. And there were these people there, and they started to talk about the Infrastructure Bank. I had no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. And when I spoke to them, I asked them to explain it to me, and they just started to talk in the circuitous language that I recognize as double talk. And I was so upset by it till I started to ask questions about what this is, because this was like the most massive programs, because it is not a single program. This affects mm-hmm. everything. If you read the bill, Tanya, you see it affects okay. everything.
Oh, I'm just like sitting here shaking, you know, and that massive is right. Wow. Uh-huh.
Yes, and so what I want to do and what I wanted to do this year was to have people who were involved in it come to the summit so that people who had had a chance to read the bills, and I'm not talking about people on the Hill, I'm talking about just regular citizens, would open this bill up and start to ask questions about it. Because I think that there is a way that questions can be cast in Washington that don't really expose the issue.
Right.
Agree.
Right.
Agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a clever aide in Washington can ask 30 questions, but it never gets to the core issue. I think that people, just regular citizens, are much better at getting at the core issues, and they also can translate it into language that people understand. Because the problem with bills like this is that people don't understand. Everybody's talking about the Green New Deal. But people don't remember how massive the WPA was. And
yeah.
For all I can see, this is as massive as the WPA. Honestly, I think it might be more massive.
Well. You know, and the thing is, like, with these bills, you notice that this virus happened, and we noticed, you know, we knew that this was put out in the public, you know, early this spring. But since last September, they've been funding, the Fed has, the banks, the four biggest banks, including J.P. Morgan, with $60 billion a day to keep them afloat because they're insolvent. So part of this supposed crisis we're in is to cover that up, to keep you from paying attention to it. And they gave them $3 trillion as of 2 weeks ago Monday, and they were supposed to cap it at that, which is an unthinkable amount of money. We can't even comprehend the amount of money that actually is. When they passed the stimulus, they said, well, we're going to give them another million, which actually parlays into somewhere around $4 trillion more. And the little checks everybody's going to get or has gotten, however it goes, people are going, well, see, they're taking care of us. You're going to get this paltry little check, and when it's gone, then what? Then what? But I said, this
then
is only being given to you to keep you quiet so you don't revolt against what they're doing. And while all of this, and you're all distracted by this, they've been talking about this infrastructure bank for the last year, talking openly about it and how to implement it, knowing that with the internet, and once this bill got out there and people saw what it was about, if they weren't diverted with something else, they'd go ballistic because it is a corporate takeover of our country.
Well, how about we let our listeners know about the bill that might not know what the bill is about?
Yes, we're going to.
And their number one sponsor is the National Infrastructure Bank, but yet it affects.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking about financial services, education and labor, natural resources in the budget. For a period to be subsequently determined by the speaker, I don't care where you fall in the political line. I really, truly, genuinely don't. Okay, public corruption is public corruption. But the speaker, consideration of provisions as fall within the jurisdiction of the committee concerned. This is only in the introduced stage right now. It's got to pass the House.
Yes.
It's got to pass the Senate. It's got to go to the president and then become law. Let's make sure that this does not slip away and actually become law. And if you think it actually, if you're one of those that thinks it actually sounds reasonable, that's fine. Once again, I won't judge that, but you need to pay attention to all the amendments along the way. And if it became law, what it really is that you were okay with in the beginning probably isn't right now.
I think the problem is, and this is just me speaking now, I think the problem with these different movements I've seen now over the last 10 years are that very often they're not driven by logic. They're driven by anger.
Yep.
Yes.
And it bothers me immensely that people are so angry so often. I think it taps down logic.
Right.
And I think that one of the reasons this happens no matter who you are is because we don't have a unifying vision for what we think America should be, nor how society should work. And that's bothered me for a very long time. If I speak to 10 different people, I can't get 4 of them to agree on what they think the future should look like. Of course, we're all, we're all very aware here. We're astute women. We understand that everyone is not going to agree. But what I am seeing is a dissembling of any agreement. It seems like we're more interested in having an enemy than having a shared vision.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly. Who wins when there's discourse? It's none of us.
Yeah, none of us win like this. Wanted to make this one point. Whether, the discussion of how COVID got here or what COVID does or all of those discussions are worthy, my primary concern is that it is killing the weakest.
Yes.
They don't know why they're dying, and the people who are working with them don't know why they're dying. And so I'm more interested in stopping the death, arguing the point. There needs to be enough of us around to argue the points. But we are so, we go to our corners and we put on our boxing gloves and we come out with a fight in mind. And I think the battle should be that people understand how amazingly vulnerable we all are and how no matter which end of this game that you're playing it on, which extreme you're playing it on, the bottom line is that the poor and the vulnerable continue to be what is offered up to these gods of power. We continue to be the kindling that keeps these bonfires burning. I've long told Marty that whenever you look at an Army recruiting station or a military recruiting station, it is never in the best zip codes. It is always in the poorest zip codes.
And you see that in all kinds of public corruption. You see that, you know, where they definitely take advantage of people that don't have anybody else to rely on, those in poverty, you know, those that don't have a family necessary, or those in, just like you said, in weakened conditions, in all the facets of public corruption. And obviously this is one that our world pretty much is dealing with.
Sweeping through the city.
But, you know,
you can zip it. Take the zip code, look at the median income of the zip code, and then look at the people who are dying in the poorest zip codes in the country, in the poorest census tracts in the country. It may not be where you are, but it's going to sweep. And when it sweeps, it's going to burn through the most vulnerable zip codes wherever you happen to live. And I don't know why people are not locking on to this yet. Yes, it takes out a few people along the way. It always does. But it's going to burn through the poorest zip codes in this country. And because it has not gotten to where you are, does not mean it's not coming. And when it does, who it's going to fail are the most vulnerable people.
Listen, a few months ago, I was in New York, okay, less than a couple months ago, and we saw sick, very sick people, students all around us that were out for weeks, okay, with, you know, really bad case of the flu, a virus, pneumonia, whatever it was that the confused practitioners were, you know, were trying to, you know, diagnose them with. I have a sister who had double pneumonia, very, very sick, strong, healthy woman. We're pretty sure we know what that was before this all came out. A lot of kids, because I actually do spend time with a lot of student athletes, very, very sick for several weeks, like, you know, you just could not muster it up. However it got here, that's something that happened. Not one of them I know have, not one of them has passed away, but family members of theirs have, who have been diagnosed with, three of them, you know, that I know of, have been diagnosed with COVID that were otherwise allegedly okay. So it's real. It's real.
We found mass
murder, if you ask me, with all these.
Yes. One of the things we found was the DOD came out with that study they did here 2 weeks ago, when they forced the vaccination in the DOD. 52% of their employees came down sick. And it was directly related, their study showed that it was directly related to the flu vaccine,
that it laid
the groundwork, planted the seed for this terrible pneumonia that is being suffered. In the nursing homes, everybody in the nursing home has been forced to take a flu shot to be there. And guess where this virus is mowing people down left and right. And people in poor neighborhoods, just like Marcel said, they actively go out and recruit these people to vaccinate them. They don't give a damn that much about anybody to be doing that. But
and as far as most people know, they're getting this vaccination for free, thank goodness.
Yes. And this has been planted. It's been planted. Now, another oddity in all of this is, according to the story that came out of Wuhan, people in China routinely, because of the severe pollution and contamination of the air, suffer a very high rate of lung disease and infections and die from it every year. And so when they stopped everything, the air cleared up and a lot of people got better, but a lot of people died, we know. I'm watching this, so what did Trump do? He ordered the EPA to step down and no mining or drilling outfit will be held to any EPA rules or regulations on the environment And after this is all over, I mean, they can just pollute to their heart's content. As long as they can tie what they did to this virus, they won't be charged with anything.
Well,
now,
and
what's wrong with this picture?
And it's so difficult because you're as strong as those that you are surrounded by. And in any administration, any, you find out the hard way who you can trust and who you don't, who you can't. In
well,
any. Look at Fauci. I've got to tell you, I thought he was like, you know, my mom and I are on the phone. We're talking about it. Wow, what a great this and that. Oh, thank goodness, blah, 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 blah. Marty, you helped open my eyes. I dug deeper. I was looking deeper. It's like, you've got to be freaking kidding me what this man has been engaged in, you know, how he is, you know, connected, supposedly, okay, I'll try to be careful, with, you know, things that would, you know, benefit his and others' best interest, you know, pharma. For the purpose, you know, by vaccination. Come on. Can you get any more of a market share by calling
I mean, really.
Vaccination?
Yeah.
Right?
It's
crazy. But like Marcel says, how do we help those that are dying?
Yeah. You've only got about 10 minutes left with us. Pitch in here. What do you got
to say,
girl?
I'm just so excited that I have everyone here on the phone, and I guess, can I just keep asking Marcel questions?
Certainly.
Yes.
Marcel, I am just in awe of what you started, like this whistleblower summit, and that it's getting bigger and bigger, and more people came. And, you know, I went for the first time last summer. I was there, and I met people I had never met before. It was so amazing. There was a lot of people because of what happened in my situation as a guardianship out of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, even though I'm living here in Wisconsin. I met a lot of people from Pennsylvania, and it was such a connection to meet everybody. And I just don't even know how you got all these guests together. What was so impressive, there's so many impressive things, but I thought that luncheon was pretty amazing. I couldn't believe all the big name guests that came in. I mean, you had senators, the different speakers that were there, the different whistleblowers. I can't even imagine how you put something like that on. And I believe that you don't take any money for doing it. You just do it because you care and you want to make a difference in the world. How in the world do you pull something like this off? I can't even fathom me trying to do anything like it.
Me either.
First of all, it's not just me. No. There are partnerships, so there are different groups that come in and put on different events. Every year, there's the National Whistleblower Center, and they take the luncheon. We've been focused on the panels, so when you were there, Cause, and you were up in the Heart Building in that big room at the top where you looked out over the city. I make arrangements for all of that stuff to happen. This year, you guys were not there for it, but at the National Press Club, we had the screening of a film called Official Secrets, which was about whistleblowers. So we had the stars there, we had the director there, we had a room full of press and movie reviewers there. This year, we had planned for something even better than last year, but unfortunately, COVID is not going to let us do that. So my interest is building a movement, because movement building is what I like to think I do. So the reason to build the movement is so that it will be all right to tell the truth and to call public corruption into view. And the only way to do that is to get people to support whistleblowing and whistleblowers. So the big corporations have lots of money and PR firms and things that they hire to push against us. The only thing that we have that we can fight back with are our organizing skills. And I think that the reason it's important that we hold it consistently in Washington, D.C., is because no one in the House, no one in the Senate, no one in the agencies can say that whatever our concerns are, we have not told them, because everyone mm-hmm. on the Hill is invited to every panel and every event. So the reason
there any,
go on. Well,
were there any senators or any or representatives that you found came to a lot of the panels, or that they cared to hear what people had to speak? Was there any group of, you know, any of our representatives that cared about this?
Absolutely. And what you'll be amazed at is that they send their staffers, because the dirty little secret in D.C. is generally all of these politicians' positions are established by their staffers.
A lot of people actually do arrange their do plan to when they come to the summit. They'll come a day or two early or stay a day or two later, and they will attempt to or already have appointments made to see representatives. You are allowed to go and knock on doors to request meetings. These are our representatives. Let's see what they're willing to do. Let's see if they're willing to listen. Last time I was there, I sat there, and I won't get into it. We're closing out. But I sat there and I said, I'm not going to leave until I talk to somebody important. if it can't be the center, it wound up being the next in line.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I would tell people very often, speak to the chief of staff. You know, if you want to get it moved, speak to
Representative
chief of staff. Mm-hmm. Legislative director, speak to those people, because you'll be amazed how far your issue goes with them. Absolutely. But the reason we bring you to Washington, I want you to stay in Washington, is because when you're in Washington, you can leave there and go directly to your representative's office. The fact that Congress isn't in session, it doesn't mean that there's no one at that office. The representative may not be there, but they're there. And we have the summit when Congress is in session. So you can always go and speak to your representative, but you would be amazed how many times we have many panels and the representatives have their legislative lead on the panel. So when we're introducing people, you think that we're just introducing people, but that isn't what's happening. What it is we've got two or three legislators, and they want to be seen and to be informed of what's going on, and they'll actually have their representatives on the panel.
Well, I learned so much when I went last year, and I feel like I probably represent like the average person. I'm just a baker. I'm not a lawyer. I don't, you know, understand all these things, and I learned so much. I felt like in our issue where we're really going towards like the elder, you know, the elder, but really it's judicial accountability. And that was the main thing that I learned. Mm-hmm. And to look at it differently as it's not elder abuse. Well, yeah, it is elder abuse, what they're doing, but it's the judicial that has allowed it. And walking away, having that click in my head and realize that that's how I need to really focus on it, even though it is elder abuse, the guardianship, what they do, but that the judicial has allowed it. That was golden. And one of my senators here in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, was one of the speakers. And someone here in Wisconsin, because I was there, they got a meeting with him, and their loved one was in a guardianship. So it made a difference. And I learned something, and I was so honored to come back to my home state of Wisconsin and make a difference for someone else. So I just want to thank you so much, Marcel, for everything that you do. I've just been in awe having you on the show, and I'm just so excited to have been able to speak with you. And thank you, Marty, for letting me talk with Marcel.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And Yummy cookies.
All right. I'm going to go. It's my I have a little, they have a surprise. We have a supper club, and we will be social distancing. There's not a lot of people here, but my family, we're actually going to eat in a restaurant, the four of us, but it's, we own it, so we're okay. So that's going to be our fun little thing. Happy birthday.
Right, well, have a
thank you.
Happy birthday,
thank you so much. Thank you so much. Good night.
Yeah, all right. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody. Well, good night, cause.
Good night. Well, good night.
Good night. This is, this has been quite a conversation. Marcel, knowing what things are for this year. Oh, I think we lost Marcel. We did.
Marty, come on, you and I have one of our, you know, let's go on for hours. I'm game.
Okay. All right. Well, you were talking
but not
about
only,
how
but not
all
only
this...
the judges, the attorney generals.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to speak
yes.
up, but the attorney generals, because that's the
yes.
highest, that's the highest level of government in each state that has an opportunity
right.
To intervene and to listen instead of turn their backs.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, and I've mentioned this several times. I found out here a couple years ago from both the state level attorney general and the federal. They've said almost exactly verbatim the same thing to me. You're operating under a misconception. And that is that we're here for you and we are not. We are here to protect the government from you. They only act and will act when the state has suffered injury, meaning monetary injury, or they see there's an opportunity for the state to gain monetarily from going against someone, an organization or a corporation, whatever. But they are not here for our benefit. Yeah. They are not here for our benefit. We're paying these people to work against us, basically. As many people have found out in the guardianship issue, you go to the state's attorney general and they won't do anything. On the federal level, the Supreme Court has said this is the state's business. And anything that's in rem, meaning in motion in the state, is the property and control of the state. And they won't get involved. That's their excuse for staying out of it. They won't hear any cases on this. And the Fed.
That's why you need to get to
collect...
Capitol Hill and go to this summit.
Yes. And it is the Feds claim that this is state's business. Anything like this guardianship family court is state's business. So they can't get involved in it. So we see these bills coming out, these fluff and buffs that suggest the states do this and suggest the states do that. But they have no spine in them. There's no teeth in them. There's no law that's violated. There's no crime cited, no enforcement, no punishment, no nothing. Because they said it isn't. They claim they don't collect any stats. And I'll say again, if they don't collect any stats on guardianship, then how is it the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, issues that report every 2 years on guardianship? I want to know. Somebody's collecting something. But they all feign, you know, and they we go there, and on the guardianship issue, I've had senators and representatives there say, well, you know, you have to talk to, you know, the people in your state government. They're not doing their job, and apparently you're not doing yours either. Because your job is to represent me, and you're not representing me. You're representing corporate interests. You're representing everything but the people in your state. Why aren't you moving to protect them from this? And, well, you know, and I hear Tanya, well, things like this take years to change. Why is that? I see bills passed all the time that end with the statement, effective immediately upon passage. Why would this take years? And one of the worst things that was told to me here recently was a lady out of the Minnesota government who said to me, you misunderstand. She said, probate court saves the state millions of dollars. And I said, oh, let me correct you, please. Probate court makes the state millions of dollars. You know that money you get under that block grant? Yeah, that block grant out of Social Security, Title 20? Mm-hmm. I said, where you get somewhere between $35, $40 million lump sum dumped in the treasury. And I said, it's supposedly a third of that is earmarked for elder services and care. Can you
look,
please
show
me?
If they want it to take a long time, they'll let it take a long time. But let's just look at this, H.R. 6422. There's been, I believe, six, no less, actions since, I believe, it was proposed in March. Six actions. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct or am I missing something? I believe it's six actions.
Yeah.
Because right now I'm not on the page.
Yeah.
Six actions.
Yeah.
So,
and nobody
has said a word about it.
As
slow as you want to be or as fast as you want to be, it depends on who is the grantor and the grantee.
There you go. Well, and the other thing is, too, like I say, this supposed virus is far too convenient. While the whole country is being held hostage to this virus, all sorts of is going on in D.C. and on your state level. You need to get on and watch your state, what laws are coming up that are pending and everything else, because even if they are not physically meeting, they are meeting by teleconference, and they are voting that way. And this is but like I say, this bill to come out at this point in time, when supposedly we're in the midst of this crisis, why would you even be proposing such a thing when the country is under attack from this virus? Why would you do that? And it's because it's what they intended to do anyway. And it goes hand
and
in hand
I
with
don't
these
really
banks.
Think it's proposed virus. I'll be honest with you here, and I know we're allowed to have our own opinions,
yes.
Murray, and we don't always. But I don't think it's proposed. I think the virus is real. I think it's man-made. That's what I think, you know. But it's here.
Tanya, the thing is, one of the things they're not collecting when they collect all this information on these patients is they have been ordered by the CDC not to collect any information about recent flu vaccines. I wonder why that is. They do the same thing with SIDS death. Sudden infant death syndrome.
I apologize. I wasn't
which
aware
was
of that.
Virtually
that's even more compelling, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was virtually unheard of before they started this vaccination thing, is now quite commonplace within 24 to 48 hours of these doses of vaccines. These babies just die in their sleep. But the medical community has been ordered not to list any information related to vaccines associated with that death, like the proximity of time, how many vaccines were given, what vaccines, and they can't collect any of that and put it down in the record on that infant that has passed away. And they just say, oh, they died. Yes. I don't know. What?
Well, just a couple of days ago, Fauci did come out and he said it's going to be even. It was pretty much a blanket statement. It's going to be even worse next year. And it's really one of those times when I can appreciate the people that are saying that this is just fear-mongering, you know what I mean? Because I feel like, how can you actually know that? Think about what our country, the world, not every country, but, you know, the world in general is going through right now. If we don't know, the overall majority, I believe, is very well apprised of sanitation methods, of, the necessary, or whatever, whether it is necessary or not, yet to be, whatever it is, okay? But we know about washing our hands. We know about disinfecting. We've known about that for the most part all along.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're actually integrating that. If we're going to have a worse flu season than we've ever had, or if this virus is going to be any worse, you know, it's just my opinion, I would actually be so darn shocked. Because if we haven't learned things from this, then we're really in trouble. What is it that would make it worse unless it was, again, something else man-made, or you know what's going to be next, or water, whatever. But the problem is, we need to solve the problem regardless of how it got here.
Okay, in Italy, that supposedly was hardest hit, they finally admitted that 99% now of the people who died, and they always have a high death rate daily anyway. They have a very poor health care system.
Right.
They have major
poverty. Yeah.
And yes, and 61% of their population is 60 or over. So you got three strikes against you there. They finally admitted that of all these massive deaths they were reporting as COVID were actually elderly people that had severe underlying health conditions, many of them having two or three. And that
changing the death certificate. Right.
Yeah. And
or just putting
there
in
you
there
go.
To begin
and
with when it really isn't the issue.
Yeah. When they talked about that, about how they listed it as COVID, but it was assumed because they didn't have any testing. So we don't know how many or if any died. I'm sure some did from this virus. But
sure.
The other little piece to that is in Italy, they had just given out here early this winter free flu vaccines to the elderly and the poor. I wonder what was in those vaccines. You have seen countries like Japan who rejected mandatory childhood vaccines because they said there was so much damage to the population, the children. They rejected and will not give HPV vaccine because they said it caused too much death and chronic illness in these girls, blindness, paralysis, sterility. Our own fertility rate in this country due to vaccines is only 40% of what it should be for a replacement population.
Right now are feeling guilty that's listening to this, thinking that we are being responsible and doing the right things by our children and by ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And how many?
And
we can't do anything about that, but we can think about the future.
Well, and I keep asking people, how many of these babies have to die after multiple vaccines before you get a clue here? You cannot intentionally infect, especially a baby, with viruses, mutated viruses, fungus, bacteria, the DNA of non-related species, toxic chemicals, dimerosal, mercury, polysorbate 80, which is known to cause sterility, and is in these vaccines in high quantities. Yes, and they are knocking these out because of the damage done to the population, the overall public health, and yet they keep pushing it. Now let's go back to this virus. Of course, Gates, who I think should be locked away from the rest of humanity, I think he is a danger to humanity, is wanting people to carry around a certificate of vaccination. No, that's not going to happen. And if you want to work, you're going to have this certificate. See, we're being coerced and extorted. If you want to go back to any semblance of your life, you're going to take this vaccine and pay for it. You talked about these college kids being sick. They're all forced to take vaccinations to get into college. Every college in the country that takes federal money forces vaccines. We saw this at, Hammond University, where the whole dorm that was vaccinated at one time came down with the mumps. But it wasn't the wild strain. It was vaccine-induced, mutated virus they got. We've seen whole Harvard had that whole dorm, that whole section come down with measles after vaccination. It wasn't the wild virus. It was the mutated virus out of the vaccine. They had vaccine-induced measles. And we see this all over the world. They just got caught sterilizing 500,000 Kenyan kids between the ages of 15 and 16 with an unnecessary tetanus vaccine.
You know where my heart burn over this is on top of it all?
Where?
It is, you know, like I've got a very close family member that is immunocompromised. And it's trying to find that doggone research to determine risk and reward. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is, if you've been vaccinated,
very difficult.
You have been you have been made immunocompromised if you have been vaccinated. We don't vaccinate. And my kids or grandkids don't get chronic ear infections, don't suffer from asthma, don't have any of these long-term health problems that these kids that have been vaccinated do.
Right, but, and, but now what do they do? But now what do they do? Do they, I mean, I'm looking for, you know, do we stop that? Does that put it, you've got the rheumatologist on one end saying something, and mind you, these professionals that you are so grateful for actually diagnosing them, okay, regardless of the cause, just like, you know, Marcel says, you know, however it gets here, people are dying. So regardless of the cause, you know, finally somebody is diagnosed, okay, what do you do now? Do they do this to keep them safer because they are of the population that is more at risk, or do you not do that? I you know what, Marty, and I consider myself a very organic person, and my first line of defense is usually homeopathic and Ayurvedic and whatnot. And, you know, here I got it in the mail today, sent it to you, the Turkish oil, the oregano oil. You know, that to me is, you know, I'm going to be digging deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and I'm going to line that up, you know, as my mother taught me, and one side pros and cons, and the cons on the other side, you know, it'll be two columns, flu shot or whatever, for the immunocompromised loved one that's potentially looking to you for some input and insight. That's, those are tough things. Those are very, very tough things. Because we know right now, if you're already immunocompromised or if you're older, that you are more at risk. So what do you do with that now?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Well,
that is,
and then,
so tough.
And I think something else we're going to see here in the near future, because too many doctors have come out and called BS on all of this, saying, you know, this isn't what they're saying it is, and this is, the vaccines are what's causing it, don't take the vaccine. And this is another thing, now they're promoting this global vaccine. They stand to make $40 billion off a vaccine that they're going to rush to market. And one of the things I've told people is this, from what I know from all these years of digging into vaccines and talking to scientists and doctors about it, it takes a minimum of 6 months to develop a successful cell line. That's after you map the genome of the virus or whatever it is you're going after. Then from there, it takes another 12 to 18 months to grow that cell line to the point that you can bring it into production. How is it they're going to be having a vaccine shortly? The only way they could was if they developed whatever it is that's attacking people, and they already know because they created it. That's the only way, because mapping the genome alone takes a considerable amount of time. There is so much in this that does not make sense, but what I think we're going to see in the near future, if the internet isn't shut down totally, it'll be so censored that it won't be worth your time getting on it. One of the biggest complaints by government officials about the internet is, instead of like things like all this social network and all the games that are on there, it was to keep you occupied with mundane, stupid things. Facebook, you know, people got really tired of, I'm going to have bacon and eggs for breakfast this morning, and, you know, and all the religious stuff about, you know, type amen if you love the Lord. You know, you were supposed to be diverted by all of this and not paying attention, but instead it has turned into the news network of the day. And I thought one of the funniest things, ironic, was when they came out with all this fake news. Oh, everything's fake news. If you said anything about Trump, oh, that's fake news. And fake news this and fake news that. And then they were systematically outed, each one of the mainstream media, systematically outed for promoting fake news, for getting on air and telling outright lies. And That's why I come out on C-SPAN
so much. Let's forget the narrative. You know, do I watch different stations to see what everybody's saying about each other and their own interpretation based on their own biased ways? And by the way, that's including every station, you know, even though some people might not believe me.
Yep.
But I have stations I certainly favor that I believe in more than others. But let's watch what's happening in action. You know, watch C-SPAN.
Yeah.
Leave out the doggone narrative. Put your thinking cap on and use your brain.
Yep. And listen to what's actually going on. I think the other thing that they have been so successful with, and is predicated upon the same way religion operates, you get a few people together that are like-minded. You start talking to them, and you start encouraging what they're thinking about, what their biases and opinions are, and telling them they're absolutely right. And then when everybody's good and comfy, you drag something or someone out and say, this is your enemy. In the church, it's the devil. In government, it can be the opposing party. It can be another country. It can be these unnamed terrorists from over somewhere else. It can be anything, and say, these people hate you and they want to kill you. Let's go kill them first. If we don't, in church, you're going to go to hell. And in government,
that's
you could end up dead from
sector.
What they're going to
do. Go non-denominational.
Yeah, well, I don't do the religion thing. I don't believe religion and God are one and the same. And but this
that.
Is what I mean. It's a method of operation. And so we have a government, both parties of what is actually one controlling party in D.C., but they play the part of right or left, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, and they pit the public against each other constantly. So you keep fighting this one, and that one keeps fighting that one, and we aren't paying attention to what these jackasses are doing. Because we're out here, you know, I think one of the most insipid things said to me here recently, and this was on air, is this one girl called in, and in her best little girl baby voice, she said, I don't care. I think President Trump is the best president ever in my lifetime, to which I responded. That just goes to prove some people really were born just yesterday. And
hold on.
She got upset.
Hold on.
Yeah.
My eyes might roll a million times when it comes to some of his stupidity or unnecessary remarks or embarrassing remarks. But I do tend to believe that his policies have benefited many. The majority.
Yes.
And I know this
all
might be for another topic. No. I know people of all levels that's another topic of conversation. Because I would just love for somebody who can't stand President Trump to just say one good thing about them. And there is more than one good thing that he has done,
and
they're not willing
say,
to.
But,
and that, those are the
but,
people oh, that I don't respect. No president's going to be perfect. You're not going to align with them 100% of the way.
Well, of course not. But we have a man that is so disconnected from the public that, like you say, that's a conversation for another day. But what I'm saying is, these people are not for us out here in the public. You have only to watch what's going on, whether it comes from the left or the right, no matter who's talking, part of this cabal out there, they could give a crap whether you live, die, or survive. It's how much money can they make off of you? How much can they take from you? How many dirty deals can they pull off that you don't know about that profits them handsomely? This is what's going on. We are for sale. We have been commodified. We are referred to as human resources, as opposed to what?
We're assets. We genuinely are assets.
We are the most valuable product of the country, and they buy, sell, and trade us as a commodity, not as human beings. This is how these administrative courts came into being. You suffer a civil death when you end up in one of these courts, the same as if you had died a natural death. You have no rights. your name is in all capital letters and people say, oh, that's conspiracy. No, that is a legal symbol.
1933.
Indicating.
1933.
Yes. Indicating that you have suffered a civil death, that you do not exist within the law. And so figure that one out and go talk about how crazy we all are. We just got a few minutes here, Tanya. Wait a minute. We got a caller that wants in. Let me get this one on. Hang on a second. Area code 605. Did you have a question or comment?
Howdy. Were you talking at all about the way that the in New York State, for example, how Cuomo transferred patients from hospitals who had COVID-19 into nursing homes? Did you hear about
that? No, I did not hear about that. No. No.
Ah, okay.
Whoa.
Well, I was listening,
tell us what you know.
To your monologue. Excuse me?
Tell us what you know.
Well, I only know what I heard on Levin about a half an hour ago. And the fact is that somebody from... Sorry?
Go ahead.
Okay. Somebody from Cuomo's office had called him up about a month ago and read to him a directive that apparently Cuomo had signed that transferred hospital patients who had come down with COVID-19 to nursing homes. Now, does anybody wonder why the stats about this particular virus is so skewed and just out of whack?
That
Isn't
makes
your
sense.
Central Park wide open waiting for patients? Right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Central Park, aren't there hospitals? Aren't there hospitals built there and beds there for COVID patients? Why not? Why put people in nursing homes? That doesn't make sense to me if there are all these beds that are genuinely still available. You know?
They're not a
boy.
Right. Well, as your co-host was saying before I get on the air, they don't care about you. This is about money. This is about bringing down the United States. And even if it isn't about bringing down the United States,
it is. Yeah.
As a purpose, it is definitely a side effect as a result of these politicians taking money under the table. In my opinion, all of these people are freaking corrupt, and they take money from lobbyists.
Yep.
And the lobbyists are connected with the Chinese or the Russians or any communist type of government that has money. And we've been the object of having been taken down for years, ever since 1963, minimum, when the House of Non-American Activities were relating to us about what the communists wanted to do to us. This is not surprising.
Yes. Yes. And I wish you'd have called in earlier. I've only got about 2 minutes
I know.
Here.
Please keep connecting to these shows and press those buttons on your phone. Great call.
Oh, don't worry, I'll be back.
All right, I hope you will. Please come back on. And you can get a hold of me, I'm Marty, at TS Rad, that's like Twisted Sister, RAD1, at Outlook.com. And let's hook up, see if we can get you on. Thank you for calling in. Tanya, I've only got about 60 seconds left here. Thanks for joining in tonight. Kaz, have a happy birthday. Marcel, thank you for participating. It was great having you on with us. We will be back tomorrow night with Whistleblowers. And the show's kind of up in the air right now as to who we're going to have on. I've got several people that want the slot, but I have to figure out what I think is most important. But anyway, we will be back. And I said tomorrow night, I mean next Thursday. Good Lord, I am getting old. I keep thinking this is a different day of the week. Anyway, everybody have a good evening. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I truly appreciate it. Tanya, thank you for hanging in there to the end. And we will talk to
God
you all.
God bless you, Marty. You are amazing. Thank you for you.
Well, thanks. But you'll be back Sunday night, I believe. And we'll pick
ma'am.
Up with Tanya Talks, and we'll go from there. Everybody, thank you again for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night.